This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles. I am at Otago Polytechnic and I am back with our roving reporter, Tim Lynch.
Hello, Sam. Thank you. Welcome back.
So we're continuing your journey around Europe.
Yes, so today we find ourselves in the island of Bornholm, which is in the middle of the Baltic Sea. It's a small island off the coast of Denmark. You take a ferry there, and when I went over it was pretty lumpy, it was the middle of winter. You take a ferry over there and it sort of has a history of being a holiday resort now, but before that it was the centre of a large fishing community. Unfortunately, what happened was stock collapse, they had to pivot and change, and they've adopted sustainability across the entire island. So this interview in itself, I was really fortunate. I got to talk to Sven, who's the CEO of Svenic Brewery, and they are a carbon neutral brewery on the island of Bornholm, and they've aligned themselves with three of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Svenske Bryghus is one of the pioneers in the Danish craft beer industry. It was one of the first microbreweries actually that occurred back in 2000 when we started up. It started up as a pub brewery actually. We still have the brewery down in the restaurant here in the center of Svenske. And I think back then it was like number 10 brewery in Denmark or so. And now we have 260 breweries. So a lot have happened during these last 24 years. As I said, started up as a pub brewery, and as you come here in the winter time and you experience it's there's not so many people. Bornholm is, you know, has one face, the winter, also very beautiful. It's very beautiful over here, but not so many people, very quiet. And the summer time, which is from April until October, where you have a lot of tourists, so people everywhere, all the restaurants are open and a lot of things is going on. So all the restaurants, all these tourists also came here. It has always been like that, and they experienced special beer, not industrial beer, but craft beer down in the restaurant, and they thought it was good. So the brewery was actually a huge success. Everybody thought this was exciting, something new. And we started to sell beers from the restaurant also to Copenhagen area, to restaurants over there. And after a while, it just took off. And we had to employ, brewmaster and local people invested in this brewery. The original owner is from Svenske, and the family which now owns the brewery is also from Svenske, but they also own other companies. And they went as investors, went in to be a majority stakeholder in 2007 when this brewery was built as a greenfield brewery from the start. It was thought as a brewery, which is a big advantage for us also today. And we are now 12 people employed here, so it's not huge, but we are have evolved to be one of the big of the small breweries in Denmark. When we built the brewery back in 2007, a lot of It was actually quite sustainable, if you can say that, from the beginning, because there were a lot of solutions in the way it was built. We regenerate the heat from when we brew beer instead of it just going up in the air and smelling a lot, also to the neighbors. It goes back down and it gets to heat up all the brewery. So we don't use that much energy. We also have an extra hot water tank. This means that, you know, when you cool down, when you brew beer, you have to very quickly cool the beer down from the herb, as it's called, from 80, 90 degrees to 8 degrees. You use cold water to cool that down, and the cold water gets hot. And then we place this now hot water in another tank, and we use that to boil the next beer brew. So we don't use that much water, and we don't use that much energy to heat the water. And that was already back then investments that were made. Also to, you know, because you save money, because energy costs a lot of money, and in Denmark water also costs money. So you save also money, get to be more efficient. After, in 2014, we started up, for 2014 we got a lot of solar cells on the roof. The Danish government implemented, they supported enterprises which would do that, to invest in green energy. So this brewery also did so. So overall on the rooftop we have solar cells, and they last year produced about 55%, I think, of the electricity that we use here. So that's quite a lot. Also nice, because we saved money. Electricity went through the roof cost-wise last year. So that was... In 15, we started up with non-alcohol beers, and also when we started up with that, we decided to make them organic. And that was the first time we made organic beers. And we decided to go all the way. So in 18, as of 1st of January 2018, we only brew organic beers. So we 100% organic brewery.
So a sustainable brewery in the middle of the Baltic.
Yes, that's right. And the history of it's kind of interesting, the way that it grew and evolved. But one of the things I don't get too deep into in this interview, because there's another conversation to be had around this, a lot of it is actually surrounding the energy use. And if you can imagine in particularly places like Denmark and Sweden, energy and heat are kind of intertransferable, particularly through winter when I was there. So where they get energy from is of quite significance to them.
Definitely, because we see ourselves as how can I put it, ambassadors for this island. The family which has invested in the brewery actually are very huge on sustainable prawn fishing, called ocean prawns, and but they decided to invest in different Bornholm companies to make a difference here in the local society, to create jobs, to create growth, and also to make advertisement for this island. And Bornholm has want to be known for besides its beautiful nature, also to be sustainable island. It was awarded the Green Island of the Year in European Union in 2020. And on gourmet, high-end craft food and drinks. So what we want to be known for is the same thing: sustainability and, of course, good beer, which we take pride in brewing and selling. And it was a natural thing for us to go the organic way, to make a difference also for the nature, the biodiversity, and so on. I started here also in 18, and when I came, I said to our brewmaster, who's also a very dedicated person into sustainability, I said to him, why don't we try to make our beers to brew, without any carbon emission? And he said, well, you know, that's not possible, because, when we use a lot of carbon when we brew, and also when we fill the bottles, so it's that can be hard to do. But I said, well, it's, you know, we produce our own electricity also. Perhaps we could buy some green electricity. So I asked the local power plant here, is it possible to buy certified green sustainable electricity from wind and solar cells. And they said, yes, that is possible. They had to make a product. It didn't exist, actually, when I called. But we started up as the first. I think we still are the only industrial player over here who does that, actually. But so all of our electricity comes from sustainable sources. And then I said, okay, we were heating up all the offices here with an oil heating. And we were using, fluid gas. So I said, perhaps we should drop the oil heating. So we stopped with that. And then we said we could go use a biogas instead of normal gas, LPG gas. That cost money, but then we could, that's also a marketing issue. It's nice to go to the customers and say, we don't use all our energy is without any carbon emission.
Isn't carbon produced in the production of beer?
You're right, Sam, that's an excellent question, and yes it is. In the process of fermentation, considerable amounts of CO2 are released in quite a concentrated form, and that is the mitigation of that is kind of critical to their ability to call themselves carbon neutral.
We buy that from our supplier, Primagas. They get it, it's a certified. It's the same thing as when you buy green electricity. So this means I have to pay a lot more. And it's not necessarily biogas that I get over here, but somebody else then will get it. Do you understand that?
And that biogas, is that the biogas produced on the island?
No, not yet. But that we hope will come. I will come to that. No, I think it is European Union certified biogas, but I think it's made from different plants. Waste of plants that is being produced somewhere. We have certifications of it. We get that every time when we buy, but various places. But it's not from the island. That it should be from the island. We hope it will be from the island. So, but as of 2020, we could go out and say, now we only use carbon neutral energy.
So then I had to pose a question. Does that mean that everything is done? He is carbon neutral? The brewery is carbon neutral now?
But we still had this issue that we buy actually a lot of industrial produced carbon dioxide, because when we fill beers, you could get a lot of bottles who go through the filling hole and very quickly comes beer. And to avoid the beer from foaming up, as when you pour it in a glass, if you didn't, it's the same thing when you put it in a bottle. So you blow actually carbon dioxide into the bottle just before the beer to avoid the beer from foaming up. And also you use it some around where to make pressure in the production process. And at the same time, when you brew beer during the fermentation process, you produce carbon dioxide. It's a part of the organic process. It comes from the malt. And I knew when from my time in Carlsberg that in the big there is you can get a plant that regenerates the carbon dioxide, so you actually you clean the carbon dioxide from the brewing process and you keep it in a tank and then you reuse it. You can either reuse it in soft drinks or in your beer if you do not have enough carbon dioxide from the production, or otherwise. So but back then in we started up with this in 19. There was not a plant for small breweries. Only huge plants. 100 million Danish kroner, which is not bigger than the brewery. And this technology didn't exist. So we asked Copenhagen University, we asked the Danish Brewers Industry Association if they knew if there anywhere in the world were something emerging, or if we should make perhaps a project, because this carbon dioxide thing will not go away, so it will be important for all of the breweries around, not only in Denmark actually, but everywhere. But the technology didn't exist. So we heard about an Indian company which had started up making a mini plant, still quite big though, to regenerate the carbon dioxide, but which could be used for small breweries. And we had a talk with them down in a brewery mass in Germany. But you know, there's a long way from India to here if you have to make service on the. And then we heard about a Danish inventor and entrepreneur who had started up his own company on an island called Fyn, another part of Denmark. And he was trying to actually do the same thing which we had been thinking of, because he had been working for one of these companies who produced the big plants for big breweries. And he could see that there would be a big need in the market, and a market for picking up and regenerating carbon dioxide for small breweries. So we talked to him, and he was developing the first plant in a small scale for another small brewery. And we got in contact with him, and he developed the second plant for us, together with us. And it was ready here, I think, in the end of 2020. So since December 2020, we have been regenerating the carbon dioxide, which is being produced when we ferment the beer. We clean it, we use it in our production process, and we actually also fill, you know, bottles for our keg customers. When you put beer on tap, you also use carbon dioxide. So we can also sell it. And this means that we do not buy carbon dioxide anymore. We reuse the carbon dioxide from our own production. So, but that is actually scope 3 in the... Yes.
Hang on, Tim. What are these scopes?
So the scopes are the way that we measure carbon emissions, and the easiest way to explain this is if you think of an electric car. So if you go onto the internet, you'll find a million examples of where people say that, you know, how many fossil fuels are used in the production of a electric car, and they're quite correct. It does require a lot of intensive energy to produce and make an electric car, and that's scope one, is all the emissions that are in the required to get the materials to build it. Scope two is the emissions in the production of the vehicle itself. So the building of it, assembling of it, distribution and shipping it around. Where it becomes different is scope three, which is the emissions that are released from the vehicle during its lifespan, which in the case of an electric car, there are no emissions. There are no scope three emissions as compared to a traditional internal combustion engine. And so that's how carbon is measured in the three different areas, scope one, two, and three.
We put a tap. We connect the tank where the fermentation is going on to this small machine where we clean the carbon dioxide, and we make it. It's being made fluid, so that it can be stocked.
So it turns it into a liquid.
Yes, it turns into a liquid, and then again it turns into a gas when we use it in the fermentation in order to stock it. It's actually quite small plant, so he's a brilliant engineer, and he's now selling it to breweries all over Europe, actually also in the States, I know that. And we have been, of course, developing some of it together with him during those years. And actually our brewmaster, who was here, just stopped last year and is now also working for the same guy and promoting it everywhere, because we were like a pioneer in that. And so we said, okay, we think that's a great story. Actually, also we save a lot of money because we don't buy this CO2 anymore. We produce it ourselves. So although, of course, it costs money and a lot of time, we also save money. So and it's quite, you know, we have customers, especially hotels and some of the restaurants, where sustainability is important to the customers. So when we can tell them what we do, they think that's a great story. You know, organic beer produced without any CO2 emission, that is a great story. And if they want to be sustainable, they of course choose sustainable suppliers. Still, doesn't sell any beer if the beer doesn't taste good. But if it's the beer is good and prices are okay, then it's a great story.
come from music track, Tim?
Right, well, music's a funny thing because there's types of music that everyone listens to but no one will own up to. Drum and bass is a classic example of it. Everybody listens to it, nobody owns up to it. Another example of that is country. And of the past couple of years, I've been delving into gothic country, dark country, alt country, whichever you want to call it. And I decided because we're going to go on the gothic country side of things, it'd be appropriate to have two artists, both of which have died. So the first one is going to be Fingers to the Bone by an outfit called Brown Bird.
I work my fingers to the bone, not a pretty little penny have I got to show. I ain't looking for much, just a little bit of rest by the side of the road. I lift my voice to the forces above, the lords of labor and the goddess of love. Ain't I been a good, hard worker, fit for serving the sun?
So Tim, at the end of the day, when the day is done, why do we need to care about this?
Yeah, another excellent question, because it is on one hand you're going, well, there's a brewery on the small line in the middle of the Baltic Sea, who really cares? What does this actually matter? Well, it's become more and more relevant to New Zealand. If you think back, well, a couple of days ago, I think on Wednesday, it was announced that we've now got a free trade agreement with the EU. One of the criteria on that is that we have to adhere to the Paris agreements. If we don't adhere to those agreements, if we don't adhere to carbon reduction within our economy, our free trade agreement is going to be pulled, because they're going to see New Zealand as having a competitive advantage because we're not going to worry about the amount of carbon that we're producing. Now, if you, on top of that, add that we also have about $30 million in carbon debt that we haven't paid off or is not part of the current budget which is going through, And if you also consider that we're having to reduce the amount of carbon credits available to polluters in New Zealand, we've got a bit of a perfect storm starting to brew surrounding how our country is starting to deal with carbon. Another example, using cars again, when we removed the subsidies that were going forward for electric cars, we've actually opened ourselves up for a bill of anywhere between $100 to $350 million in carbon credits because we are not decarbonising our passenger fleet. So the ability to start shifting our manufacturing bases into something which is carbon neutral is going to allow us to compete on an international market more readily.
We said, okay, now, but we get all these science-based targets from Europe. It's a great thing, though, and we said, well, what does it take? We should be scope one and two, but we just needed that all our cars and our trucks and so on should also be without any car emissions. So in 2022, in September, we went our trucks out that drives our vans. We went into to we changed they were old, the two old car vans into electric vans, and we have an electric truck in the warehouse, and my company car is electric. So we are now awaiting. We have been audited here in December, and just now we're sending all documents to this auditor, force certification they're called, so they make a statement to, so that, because it's great that I say these things, but if we do not get it verified from external sources, nobody believes it. So we do that every year.
And this is scope one and
two? Yeah, scope one and two, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think we're the first brewery actually in I know we are the first brewery in Denmark which has that, probably in Europe.
Yeah. You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. I'm talking with Tim Lynch, who is talking himself with Steen Jespersen. They're on Ireland.
They are.
Do you think that makes it easier, harder, different about actually making systems changes?
Different, absolutely. They do approach things in a very systemic fashion, and look, if I was to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure if that's the Scandinavian in them, the Viking blood, or I'm not sure, or the fact that they are on a small island. When I was talking to people in the business community, they did share a lot of ideas. They are vested in how they operate, and they're also vested in each other's success. So the history of Bornholm came from being a fishing village with complete stock collapse. And I won't go into that because it's incredibly it's massive conflicts as to how that or what that occurred, but it has occurred. So the shift and pivot away from that, they seem to have all got together and grasped this idea of how can we make things better? How can we make things better for each other? And so they do start viewing change at a systems level and how they can integrate with each other to make it more successful. And it goes from the municipality through to the governmental, through to the EU, and then right down to the person who's working on the front line.
We had some issues here with our wastewater in the spring of this year. Well, we have this, you can see over there, there's a plant, a small new, it's a small, there's a tank down in the ground where actually our wastewater went over there, and then it was neutralized so that the pH value of the wastewater was okay. And then it was sent down to the and being cleaned down in the and that was creating some problems, mainly because the capacity clean water is too low, especially when in the summer season where we produce a lot, and also when a lot of people come over here. So they hadn't been investing in that for a lot of years. And then also they found out that there were some issues with when it went through the. So we thought, what can we do? And this has led to the thing that as of September, our wastewater is actively being picked up by Biogas Bornholm, which is a company over here that produces biogas from. From the agriculture, from the farmers over here, and from the meat factory, and they also come and pick up our wastewater and also our mask, which is from the beer, and our yeast, the rest from the yeast, and then it is being turned into biogas. So our wastewater is now no longer, we don't, you know, the city don't use energy to clean it. It is being turned into green energy and actually fertilizer for the ground over here for Bornholm citizens. And as of 2025, they hope to get a permission from the, they are awaiting that from the authorities so that they can expand this biogas plant. And then they can make liquid biogas, and then we can get our biogas from Bornholm, partly produced from our own wastewater, which will be a fantastic story. And that is actually cheaper than to use a lot of chemicals to, because when you pH neutralize it, you have to use chemicals, which is crazy in my point of view. So, but you do that, it's not dangerous, but you just use a lot of money doing that and a lot of chemicals. And then you also, of course, you pay money to get your wastewater cleaned. And now I don't have to pay money for the chemicals and I don't have to pay water to get the water cleaned. But I, of course, I have to pay for transporting it, but it's less money. So that means I save money and I have made a greener solution. The same thing here in the brewery. This plant to get carbon neutral. Of course, green electricity is a little more expensive. It's not much, but it is a little more expensive than. But it's especially the biogas costs money. But we save a lot of money on the CO2. So if I put that all together, and actually we produce so much CO2 that we can sell it, then it is a better business than before. So, you know, being sustainable is also about not using that many resources, and resources cost money. So, of course, it costs money to invest in the equipment. It's the same thing. It costs a lot of money, you know, for this, which so you regenerate the heat, cost money, you recirculate it, that's you need to make an investment when you build a brewery. But after 5-6 years, it has been paid. And then you just save money. And it's the same thing with the wastewater or the same thing with the hot water. And it, so initially, it costs money. But in the long run, we have found out until now, of course, being organic, the organic raw materials are more expensive. But you also get more money for the beer if it's organic. You don't get more money for it because it's carbon neutral.
But hang on, they're not getting a return on all of this work?
I know, and it seems ridiculous because it's an immense amount of effort they're putting in to make themselves carbon neutral. The way they view it is in two parts. First of it is that they view it as a compliance issue. They see it as something that they, the way that they have to operate. The other way they're viewing it is as an opportunity in that they can start incorporating some of these notions of sustainability, carbon reduction, into making a better business in how they operate. And that was a common thread that came through all of the producers that I spoke to there.
And I think that's nice. So we have taken all our colleagues from the Danish Brewers Association over here, show them what we do. So there's no, because also in the Danish brewing business, actually, there's a history where you help each other when you have innovation and so. So we're not afraid of that. And I think what we have been doing now, we have been, we are a role model for the Danish brewing industry. What we are doing, not so much, but the it's the goal for the Danish brewing industry that the other breweries should be doing the same thing as we're doing in 2030. Minus the carbon dioxide plant.
We talked before about being on an island and the systems nature of that and the community nature of that. Have they got easier being small, or does it make it harder to make systemic changes when you're small?
I think the challenge is always going to be, and is that the ability of being agile and being able to be react being small, but the scaling of these ideas is always going to be the challenge. It's, you know, and the argument is, you know, when I was talking to the guys at the University of Berlin, they were like, well, this is fantastic, but what does this look like when you put it in the middle of a ghetto in India? And that's always the metric they use. So it's the scalability of it and the ability to kind of disseminate ideas, to share them, to pass them around. I think that's where it lies.
I used to work in Carlsberg for 21 years, and I also been working for other very big companies. And of course, that is much more difficult. It's a huge, huge tank to turn around. But they don't, you know, I had to be honest, you also need to believe that it is, there's also have to be some idealism behind it. I've been on the on stage over here talking about sustainability with, for instance, the biggest bank in Denmark and auditors like or accountant companies like Deloitte. They have sustainability directors, and I'm just on stage with them because this is an example of a small company which has been. And when they ask, oh, it's impressive what you do, and I said to him, but you, of course, you know, you because they advise and they say to their customers what they should do, but no, none of those companies have chosen to buy green electricity yet, because it costs 5 euro more per kilowatt. So you and before, I think there need to be legislation to push that forward. Otherwise, these companies will not do it. They don't care.
Is it for the likes of Carlsberg?
They don't care.
They do care.
No. They don't. I think Carlsberg, they make advertising that they have, you know, because they have put glue on 6 cans, that now they don't use plastic anymore, and then they use plastic on all other sizes of. So, no, they don't. They don't. I think they do it when they can see. I know they have invested in a water plant in Fredericia, which is will innovate, I think, how you make processed water, which how you can reuse it in the process, which will be great for the industry. And I hope they will share this technology. I'm not sure they will, but I hope they will with the rest of the brewing industry, as Carlsberg used to have a tradition for doing. But no, I think you need to. These big companies are so profit driven that they need to get a kick in the ass to otherwise or a gun in the back. Otherwise, it will not do anything. Yes, I used before I came here. I worked for organic dairy, so I'm really into organic and sustainability. I have to say that. But my job here is to, you know, I'm a businessman, so my job here is to grow the business, to make it sound, to have profitable growth. And the Danish market of beer is extremely, very, very competitive. There are many breweries in Denmark, and, you know, we live in the European Union, there's no trade borders, so the Germans make quite good beer, the Czechs make quite good beer, the Belgians make good beer, everybody makes good beer, and they can just send it up here. There are some very big breweries also who do that, and very good at marketing. So in that competitive environment, we have to make a difference. We can make a difference because we are placed over here, but we sell 75-80% of our beer outside Bornholm. So we need to have a story to, and a lot of breweries are very good at brewing beer. We also are very good at that. We win awards, and our beers, when you make tests and so, we also end up very good. We have a good image, good reputation, but a lot of breweries have that. So we need to make, where can we make another difference? So in a marketing sense, a way you can make a difference, especially towards, I think, in the business-to-business area, as I mentioned, we have actually succeeded in increasing our customer base in the on-trade business. So this means more restaurants, more pubs, more hotels, and some of them have chosen us because we have the most sustainable brewery, if you can say that. But which we have this image of being sustainable, and we can provide proof of it.
I mean, this sounds like something that should be shared, that other people would be interested in.
I think that's a shame, especially when we talk about this thing. I hope we have been a first mover on this, so I can get a competitive advantage. But I hope everybody will do this as soon as possible. I think we need hope as humans, And we need that more companies do that. I'm sure they will. I'm confident they will.
It kind of comes down to the fundamentals of business. That you can't be in business unless you're viable.
Absolutely.
But you're not viable unless you're doing these things.
Absolutely. And it's that notion of the third bottom line. I mean, the Japanese have a wonderful saying, Sampo Yoshi, which is, you know, unflatteringly directly translate to three-way satisfaction, which is not the nicest translation, but however. But basically what it says is whatever product, whatever service, whatever you're delivering has to work for the buyer, the producer, and the environment. The three are in unison. For ourselves, I think, as a young, agriculturally based economy, we are sort of slowly making that transition, kicking and screaming, into the notion that we actually need to have all three of those things linked together. Whereas an established economy, they're sort of maybe a little bit further down the head, down the path on that. The flip side of that is that if you consider the way their economy is geared, that in 10, 20, 25 years' time, the notion of growth for them will be easy because the settings are such that they can grow comfortably and it's not based on extractive resources.
And crucially, there's something in here about hope, that they're doing something.
Absolutely, yep. So is this creating a template for your business to operate from?
Yes, you could say that. I hope I will be at the Svenne Brøkhus will be known for first mover and for its approach to, but I also hope we can inspire other breweries to do the same thing. And I'm sure I know another brewery already has done the same with carbon emission. I know Carlsberg just talked about they will do something in Sweden like this with one of the huge plants. I'm sure especially this, you know, we talk a lot in Denmark about a CO2 tax, and they need to do that. So it has to be comes from the politicians need to push forward. Perhaps it's also, you know, it's too tough to demand of big companies and their management that they should do this path alone if they're not forced to it. They have shareholders and owners, everybody who push down and say we want to make money. So don't spend our money on being idealistic, you know.
He's talking there about the systems and the political settings. Do you have favourable settings for someone doing that here?
Well, yes and no. It's interesting. The way it works in Bornholm is that they have a municipality which is charged with trying to find efficiencies for businesses on the island. And when I talk about efficiencies, I'm talking about reduction in carbon and CO2 outputs and greenhouse gas emissions. One of the examples they gave me of the way they operate is they got all the builders in and they pulled all the builders in and they said, look, if you guys start packing your vans differently like this, so rather than putting everything on your roof rack, strapping it down, do you know what? You're going to save X amount of petrol. You're going to save 20% petrol. And all the builders went, that's fantastic. I'm going to start doing it. And they said, but if we had approached them and said, you need to start packing your vans in such a way because we need to get our emissions down, the builders would have said, no way, we have no interest. And I thought that was a really kind of telling way to look at things because I come from a family of tradies, and I imagine if I went and told any of my family how to pack their ute to try and reduce the carbon footprint of their driving, I know exactly what I'd be told, and it'll be a pretty quick reply. But it's just the way that they have to frame things. And so they gave that as an example of operating on the micro level before you can get to the big overarching stuff. So they go through all of the businesses like that. That brewery is one example of where that has happened, where they've looked at what needs to be done, how can we support you? And more importantly, how can we create a closed loop surrounding energy production and harvesting, which is a really interesting way to look at it. And the way they're viewing energy is away from large singular infrastructure as we have in New Zealand, i.e. the Clyde Dam, and into more areas of energy resilience being small pockets of energy often, which is a very different way of viewing this as well.
one of the things that confronts sustainability agendas is the relationship between growth and sustainability, and decoupling seems to be the answer to that. And is that where they're heading? They're heading into that decoupling growth and impact?
I think what they're doing in a lot of ways is they're actually refining or redefining what growth looks like. And yeah, when you say they're decoupling it, yeah, it is a process of decoupling, but it's also a process of looking at, you know, what is the maximum that this business can be while it can still be as efficient as possible. And within that, it's also a case of looking at what does the expansion of this business look like. So they're shifting away from this idea of, well, expansion for this business means making a larger factory and getting bigger and bigger. Expansion can mean people taking our ideas and the way that we are operating and borrowing those. That can be expansion. Expansion can be in the dissemination or the shifting of the IP or the sort of intellectual property of the way that they are producing energy, goods, etc., etc. So it is a different mindset, absolutely.
But they could probably grow the business by selling their craft brand to the big business on the mainland.
Absolutely. And as he sort of said, you know, 75% of their product goes onto the mainland. So he is completely aware that there's no possible way that a factory on Bornholm can expand into the mainland of Europe, particularly with that level of competition. At that stage, he then has to start working with these larger players. And I think that's when that conversation surrounding how the larger players are operating and how that could potentially erode his brand and what he's trying to achieve would occur.
So do you think that there's potential for what that we could learn from? That we've got little breweries around here. Doesn't have to be breweries, could be people doing anything for that matter. And they are having relationships with those bigger players. Might this mindset manage to get across that bridge?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that's... See, New Zealand's an amazing country, right? We split the atom, and we tend to forget that we actually managed to split the atom. And when I was over talking with these guys in Scando countries and Bornholm and these places, the thing that was amazing is there's so many similarities between the New Zealand mindset and the Scandinavian mindset. They are more than happy to start a project that can go for 2 decades and not know the answer yet. They are more than happy to have enough faith in the people that are operating or working in that project that halfway through the project they will come up with a solution or the answer to it. And in a lot of ways that mindset is sort of how New Zealand, we used to operate. That's how we split the atom, that's how we dug these holes, that's how we threw mountains, that's how we put dams in places where there couldn't be. It's not a case of them being risk adverse or such like that. It's just this mindset of we know where we want to get to. We don't know exactly how we're going to get there just yet, but we're going to start. And because they started this, well, a couple of decades ago, you know, they're a fair way ahead of the curve, particularly in New Zealand.
So I diverted away from breweries, but let's go back. What specifically can New Zealand breweries, New Zealand hospitality take from what you've learned here?
Well, this particular brewery and restaurant, the first one straight off the bat is they've integrated, you know, 3 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals into the restaurant and also into the brewery straight off the bat. If you think about the way that the use of sustainability has actually allowed them to have, rather than a single product, which is the beer, they've now got multiple products coming out there. They've got energy, which they're able to sell because they're harvesting it. They've got a closed loop on all of the waste, which is coming out of the factory, which is being used towards generating electricity in itself. They're able to harvest the CO2 by using, well, really sort of, you know, quite clever but imaginative approaches to things. So this ability to take CO2 and turn it to a liquid form. And then the result of all those things is actually like a really efficient, effective business, which has got longevity and is robust for the long term. And I think that notion of sort of how hospitality businesses and breweries in New Zealand can operate, if they start integrating some of those ideas, I think it's not a punitive measure. I actually think it's a positive measure which will allow a new form of growth into different marketplaces, potentially.
Can they do it retrofitting to a business, to a plant, or do you have to do it from scratch?
I don't think you have to do it from scratch. I think you can sort of retrofit this stuff. But, you know, as you know, Sven was alluding to there, there is a cost associated with it. And it's sort of a weighing up of, well, how do we offset those costs? How do we make those costs viable? And in a lot of ways, you know, if a kitchen's going to buy a new oven, and it's a toss-up between putting the infrastructure in to allow themselves to align themselves with a sustainable development goal or buying a new oven, well, they're probably going to buy a new oven. That's the reality of it. So it does sort of start to slip a little bit in New Zealand, I think, into the domain of perhaps the larger players that have got the resources which are able to do these sort of things.
What lessons have you got from this as a case study for your teaching?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. The big one that's come out of this is the sort of the circular notion of thinking about the single product in a 360 degree way. So we have product development papers that we do. And when I first started that product development paper, it was actually relatively simple. If you want to charge a lot for it, you put it on black embossed with gold. And that was the packaging, and you charge over $100 for whatever it is. It was simple, and it didn't matter if it was chocolate or whatever it is. Now, the nuances and subtleties surrounding it have become more in the fact that you now have to view, well, what are the inputs and outputs surrounding this product? What are the downstream implications of this product? You know, what's the third order effect, which is, you know, I produce a product, somebody else buys it, how's it going to benefit a third person who may not be directly related to that? So they're very much about that. So that's the implications for teaching, absolutely, is like embedding some of these ideas so that when you're creating a product, you're thinking about what's coming in, what's going out. How is this product going to help someone pay their mortgage? But on top of that, how is it going to allow someone to pay their mortgage for their entire life?
Where are we going next week?
Right, next week we're going to the heart of the matter. We're going to talk about energy next week, and they've got some really, really interesting ideas surrounding energy production, the notion of sustainability as something which is to do with community resilience, the role electric cars play in all of this. They've got some incredibly innovative ideas of how to use surplus energy, what that can be used for, storing of energy. Yeah, really, really interesting stuff. So we're going to have a chat to the chief energy person on Bornholm, and they're really on the front edge of innovation surrounding that one.
Looking forward to that. What are we going out to this week?
Right, well, I thought we would go out to, following on that theme of gloomy Americana, would follow on with 16 horses, or 16 horsepower more correctly.
Awesome.
Done.
Thank you.
Cool.
Hey!
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. I think we're allowed to stop saying Te Pukenga on the end of that. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. I've been talking with Tim Lynch, who has been reporting on his conversation with Sven Jespersen from the Svenik Brewery. I'm sure it's quite different if you pronounce it in Danish. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.